My special guests today are Dr. Dominika Zentner, a cardiologist here at Royal Melbourne Hospital, and Associate Professor Paul James, who is a clinical geneticist also here at the hospital. Thank you for your time today, folks. Now, you both work for the Cardiac Genetics Clinic here at the hospital, and you're co-authors on a paper on the clinic and its outcomes in our current issue of the NJA. Perhaps you could just explain to us exactly what the clinic does and why it's important for patients.
So we wanted to describe the outcomes of the clinic, the people we've seen over the last 6 years since the clinic started in mid-2007. And the clinic is, we think, quite unique in that it's a multidisciplinary service, so it's attended by cardiologists, clinical geneticists and also genetic counsellors. And we see patients either where there is a known familial history of heart disease, some specific genetic conditions, or where that question has come up, particularly after the unexpected death of someone in the family. So it's quite a different clinic in that we're often seeing people who are well, but who are attending to determine whether or not they might be at risk of developing something, or to understand further what's happened to a member of their family.
Tell us a little bit about the study you did and what you found about the patients that you're seeing and the families that you're seeing.
We really wanted to try and describe our clinical experience over the last 6 years. We realise that it's a clinic that some people may not be aware is in function, and we have some quite unique relationships that we wanted to highlight. So we work very closely, particularly with the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine, and have patients, or have families, I should say, referred to us after an index case has died, and either there's no cause found at post-mortem or there is a diagnosis of a cardiac condition made which is thought to be genetic. And we also work quite closely with the Royal Children's Hospital in that when that's discovered, for example, by the pathologist, they might initiate referrals simultaneously both to us for the adults and to the Royal Children's Hospital for the paediatric members of the family. We do obviously also have patients come in themselves, not after a death in the family, who are referred often by other cardiologists wanting a second opinion, by general practitioners, by other specialists, and a small number of patients who self-refer in. Really trying to make sense of a family history because someone, for example, has noted a pattern of cardiac disease that seems to be cropping up in generations.
What did you find about the patients that you've seen?
I should start at the start. In that 6 year period, we saw 1,170 patients. Mm-hmm. About a third of them were individuals who had a diagnosis themselves. About a third were at-risk family members of individuals with a diagnosis. And about a third were at-risk family members who were sent along after someone had died in the family. So that, broadly speaking, makes up who we saw. We do function within the realities of the public health system, so we, although we're called a genetic clinic, we don't offer genetic testing for absolutely everybody. We try and be very careful about the family history that we obtain. There's a lot of detective work that's done by our clinical nurse specialist before patients are seen by us, so we really have the capacity and the time to put together a very comprehensive family history. Mm-hmm. And then depending on that, on the joint review and on joint decision making, which I think is really the key to the clinic, determine who we initiate genetic testing in.
Right. So Paul, what's the role of the geneticist here at the clinic?
I think from the point of view of the genetics, this is a really important model for a clinic. Because as Dominic has described, it's a very busy clinic and there's a lot of potential for genetics to have a lot of benefit, but actually making sure that the technology that we have available to us actually ends up benefiting the patients, that's quite a complicated process. And so I think what the clinic does really well is it brings together the people who have the different types of expertise that allow us to get something that works very well in a laboratory to get it actually working very well for families. So the geneticist's role is to be part of that process and to be, if you like, the interface between the laboratory genetics, the molecular side of things, and the actual clinical application in the clinic where we use that information to actually help people and to work out their risk and to give them advice.
So what does this information do to help someone with a previously undiagnosed condition, for example, and their family members? What's the next step from that?
So the real value is if we find a genetic mutation in a family and can then offer predictive testing to other members of the family, because a significant number of those who might be clinically screened don't seem to have the condition. So it really gives us the power to say, yes, you've inherited the significant family mutation, you therefore need to have ongoing screening and that, and potentially some, you know, other advice around that. But equally, the power is very strong the other way, in that if we're very confident about the mutation, we can remove people from screening, and that's very beneficial.
How does it make you a better cardiologist?
I think it does make me think a lot more about family history, and I think sometimes that's something that can be done very, I think it's always thought about around coronary disease, but I think it's done very briefly, usually in the clinical setting. We just sort of ask, is there any family history, and move on. Mm. But the clinic really takes a very extensive three-generational family history, and every time something comes up, we try and verify that. So we quite often obtaining consent to get medical records that pertain to other members in the other family members, but chasing down, for example, post-mortems and having things re-looked at. So it is a very in-depth process.
So you basically are thinking more broadly about the patient who walks in your door?
Absolutely, and we probably should highlight, we quite often see families together. So it's not the traditional clinic where it's a whole lot of us and one patient. It may be two or three medical professionals, but it's quite often a very large number of family members as well, and we're very happy to see everyone who wants to come together.
Yeah. Paul, what's the future for the genetics here? Are we talking next generation sequencing? What's the story there?
Yeah, well, we've seen that evolve in our clinic. When we started doing this clinic, in fact, there was very little that we could offer in terms of genetic testing. It was very focused. It was particular conditions, long QT syndrome, mainly in the arrhythmias. And over time, as technology's changed, the availability of testing has broadened and broadened. And these days, we actually offer extremely extensive types of testing. We're using next-generation sequencing, which are these technologies that allow us to sequence a large amount of genetic material all in one test. And currently, for instance, the typical test that you might do would be a panel-based test in which there's upwards of 100 genes that we're looking at and can pick up genetic abnormalities that might have information about a very wide range of different cardiac conditions. That is going to keep on progressing, changing, and of course we all imagine a time where if you did any genetic test, the test that you'd do would be to look at all the genes, to do a whole exome, even a whole genome. But as we go to those kind of more complicated pictures, in fact, this kind of model where you have each of the different specialties present and able to interpret that information in a way that's actually meaningful for the patients is just going to get more and more critical. So even as the testing gets easier, in fact, the need for a multidisciplinary approach just becomes essential. And I like to think this clinic it's done extremely well in focusing on cardiac disease and sudden cardiac death, but it's actually a model for how genomics might work in a clinical setting in general, and increasingly other clinics in neurogenetics and in other areas are starting to adopt this idea of actually bringing all the specialists together to get the most out of this new technology.
Is there a future for it in oncology, for example?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So cancer genetics obviously is one of the most developed areas, and we very much take that approach in cancer genetics as well. I think what's different here in cardiac genetics is perhaps just the acuteness of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with conditions where in many cases, certainly in form of sudden cardiac death, we're talking about things where there really may be no other warning other than the genetics that we are able to investigate. So we really are at the sort of the most pointy end of genomics when we're dealing with that kind of thing.
Are there other clinics like this, or is this unique?
So there are a number of other clinics that are run through the genetics service here.
But yeah, absolutely. I think it's still quite unique in the way that it really gets everybody in the room to discuss every single case. It follows perhaps the oncology pattern of multidisciplinary team meetings for discussion of cases. But in this case, the whole clinic is run like that, and we're... in other areas, you might have pathologists looking at pathology information. I think the idea of bringing genomics in as part of that mixture is a very new thing, and that I think that's pretty unique the way that we do that here.
Given that it's a multidisciplinary thing with so many people involved, is it cost effective?
So we haven't got formal costings, I guess, to discuss, but I would like to make a couple of comments. One is that we're very much a diagnostic service, we're not a management service.
Right.
So we're not suddenly taking in an enormous extra population of patients to be looked after here.
Right.
When we looked back at those 6 years, 88% of the patients saw us on at most two occasions. So we are quite time efficient, I think.
Yeah.
There is a lot of work done before the patient comes, but that's done by an individual, not the whole team, if you like. I think we're quite efficient when we see people, and we have very long appointments, but we do try to, when we discharge people from the clinic after those visits, give advice really that is an ongoing, ongoing advice.
Right.
I don't know that I can answer more about the costing of it. I certainly think that mutation detection itself is reasonably expensive still, although the cost has come down significantly.
Yep.
Predictive testing for family members is actually quite cheap. It's about $250 now. And if we manage to then exclude people from what might otherwise have been lifelong screening, there is no doubt that that's a financial benefit, because that $250 in a lifetime of screening is nothing.
I think in general genetics works very well that way, because it has this capacity to get people out of the medical system, to release them from screening, to reassure them completely that they don't need to come back for follow-up in this area. And it's kind of unique about genetic information. On top of that, of course, if we broaden it out a little bit, if you then start to think about the cost benefits of saving lives, then it immediately starts to pay for itself. So as Dominika said, the initial mutation screen is quite expensive, but if from that you're able to then go forward and prevent an adverse outcome or prevent a cardiac arrest, the cost of one individual having an out-of-hospital arrest, surviving, coming through the hospital system and then being managed, would pay for our budgets for some considerable time.
Yeah.
So if we look at it that way, then yes, of course we're cost-effective. The most effective things we do are the things that never actually happen.
Just again, in rough ballpark figures, we ended up offering genetic testing to about a third of the people we saw in that six-year period, and about half of those where we did genetic testing, we found a mutation, which is actually a very high pickup, particularly because this six-year experience precedes our transition to regular NGS testing. I think it's that high because of the amount of thought that goes into who we're going to test, not because that's truly the frequency with which we would find these genetic mutations if we did it in an unselected population, if we tested everybody.
So the selection bias.
So there's definitely, clinical decision making that goes into play about who we're going to test.
Selection bias would be one way to look at it. The other is that's where the real value of the clinic is.
Exactly,
so you're seeing the expertise that are coming through there, where if we were to go out in an unselected fashion and use genetics to try and work these things out, we would spend a lot of time to get a lot of negative results.
Yep.
But when you add in that level of expertise, it becomes very focused, and we're really doing a very good job at picking the people out where genetics has something to offer them. And so I think in the short term, while we've mentioned the cost of genetic testing is still a significant barrier in things, having that kind of expertise to allow us to focus on the people who are really going to benefit from it, I think that's a real strength of the clinic. I think the other thing is simply to highlight the sheer numbers that individually we're talking about quite rare conditions, but when you pull them all together, this is not particularly rare, and we've seen a very large number of families, and in fact the demand keeps growing to the point that physically we hardly all fit in the room anymore trying to get through the amount of work that's coming our way. So where once this might have been considered a very boutique thing that we do in the clinic, and now you'd have to say that it's becoming more and more mainstream, and I think we can only expect that to be a trend that continues.
Terrific. Would you like to see it propagated, this model of how to go about this kind of clinic?
I think certainly if it's done this way, I think it has enormous benefit. I would like to be very clear about the fact that there is no way that I could do this sort of work without my clinical genetics staff alongside. The sort of reporting that now comes back with NGS is so detailed and so complex that it's not as simple as, 10, 15 years ago, I think you could get a genetic test result and it was a yes-no answer because it just looked at one thing. It's very, very complicated, and I think if done properly, it's great.
Yeah.
Thank you both for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.